Some people call Pac-Man for the Atari VCS the worst game ever. In some cases, it vies with E.T. at the top of top 10 worst lists. What if I told you we can maybe pinpoint the exact moment Atari caused their own demise? The exact moment Atari lost the video game war. This story is about to take a dramatic turn, away from crappy games and into the realm of mistakes. We are about to uncover one of Atari's biggest mistakes. And then we will ask this question: what was the real impact of Pac-Man for the Atari VCS? And was it worse than E.T.?
Into the vertical blind, Generation Atari.
The Extraterrestrial for the Atari 2600 might not be the best game ever made, but it has a cool title screen, and it offers a complete, albeit short, challenge to be completed. While there are some unfortunate choices, it's mostly bug-free. However, E.T. the Extraterrestrial has been called the worst game ever made, and we just don't believe it. We are here to collect evidence to see exactly where E.T. falls on the bad game spectrum. In this series, we will test other notorious games from the Golden Age and see how they stack up in comparison. This is Worse Than E.T., Atari 2600 Pac-Man. What follows is an older story brought to new light in 2024 about the day I believed Atari lost the video game war, and it had to do with Atari 2600 Pac-Man.
This is a story about Pac-Man, Electronic Games Magazine, and the exact moment that I figure Atari lost the video game war. It's disappointingly difficult to find anything positive to say about this game, Electronic Games Magazine. With those words, I believe Electronic Games Magazine changed the course of video game journalism forever. The United States Constitution allows for a free and independent press because the framers believed this fourth estate was necessary for a democracy to flourish and grow. The role of a free and independent press should be the search for the truth. At the same time, it has also been said that democracy can't flourish without capitalism. In a free market capitalist system, the role of marketing is essential for companies to compete and make a profit for their shareholders. Marketing, by design, is not necessarily truthful. Marketing messages are designed to highlight the positive and downplay the negative of one's own interests while doing the opposite for competitors. However, what happens the day that said capitalist industry runs smack dab into the free and independent press searching for the truth? Part 1. Video game coverage before Pac-Man. To understand the impact of Electronic Games' review of VCS Pac-Man, I decided to examine video game coverage and reviews prior to May 11, 1982, the day that the Pac-Man review was published. My theory was that there was a distinct difference between the way games were covered before Pac-Man and the way games were covered after Pac-Man. In the before Pac-Man period of video game journalism, video games were treated more like enthusiast toys than a new entertainment medium. Electronic Games Magazine had only published 3 issues by that time: a previous column by Arne Katz and Bill Kunkel, editors of Electronic Games, and video magazine named Arcade Alley had been running for a couple years prior to that, and by examining those columns, I found a very interesting pattern. Most reviews in those publications were more like, "Gee whiz, video games are sure cool," than they were critical analysis. They focused more on the positive aspects of each game and how they compared to other games, or, when appropriate, how they compared to their coin-operated arcade counterparts. Not only were the games for the Atari VCS breaking new ground in the pages of Video Magazine, but the writers of Arcade Alley were pulling double duty. They're trying to inform the readers about great new games and also make an argument for the existence of video games as a medium in the first place. Remember, this is one of the first places that had a regular column about video games published anywhere. Plus, Atari's early games might look poor in 2020 hindsight, but at the time of their release, they were pretty much groundbreaking. Here are some examples of how Arcade Alley reported on Atari VCS games and the positive spin they took on almost all of them. Quote, "Adventure is a bold departure from the usual video game. It's one cartridge that every Atari owner will certainly want to add to his library. Arcaders who love driving games, or who've always wanted to become long-haul truckers, will be glued to the wheel for this home version of the longtime commercial favorite, Night Driver. As with the great single-player contests, Missile Command delights the senses and challenges the reflexes. Vivid graphics, including a color-changing background, help maintain involvement in the struggle to defend Earth's six cities. The verdict for Asteroids for the VCS system is fantastic. It boasts the most distinctive sound effects since Space Invaders, sharp graphics, and arcading action that never quits."
And while obvious Atari VCS hits got good nods in the pages of Arcade Alley, so did some other games that you might not expect got good reviews.
Superman. Superman ushers in an exciting new era for home arcades. One round will convince any player that always innovative Atari has done it again. Bowling is an enjoyable version of a sport that is perfectly suited to the video arcade format. Purists may claim that miniature golf doesn't faithfully imitate the real sport, but most arcade addicts would be having too good a time to care. Video chess is a game that even the lowliest pawn pushers should find rewarding for many hours of enjoyment. Atari Slot Racers has virtually nothing to do with either slot cars or racing of any kind, but ranks as the most important of the classic Labyrinth games. It's a fast-moving head-to-head thriller that requires quick thinking and even quicker manipulation of the joystick. Sports games have never been Atari's forte, but Championship Soccer more than makes amends for any previous weaknesses. It's hardly the ultimate soccer simulation, but this one's relentless action, its spare yet effective graphics, and the myriad of variations make it an outstanding team sports cartridge." End quote. Part 2, Electronic Games Magazine before the Pac-Man review. Along with Arcade Alley and early issues of Electronic Games Magazine, Atari's games received fairly good reviews. The Winter 1981 of Electronic Games said, "Missile Command for the Atari 2600 represents the most successful conversion of a commercial arcade super game to the more limited confines of a home programmable system." They called Air Sea Battle for the 2600 an instant classic, and they said the breakthrough variation of Breakout for the 2600 could easily become an addiction. In the March 1982 issue of Electronic Games, the reviewers called Asteroids for the 2600 an astonishing success. And while they were lukewarm to video pinball, they ended the review by saying it would probably interest most video gamers. There were no reviews for first-party Atari games in the May 1982 issue of Electronic Games, which leads us up to the June issue, published May 12, 1982, and the all-important review of Pac-Man. Alongside the Pac-Man review, Electronic Games said of Super Breakout for the 2600 shines far brighter than any of its predecessors. So the stage was set. From the eye of the critical press, Atari had not disappointed yet. They had revolutionized the commercialization of video games and were, at the time, the fastest growing company in the history of the United States. They were the Nintendo of their day. All they had to do was deliver a decent version of VCS Pac-Man, and their fortunes would be solidified for years to come. Part 3, the development and release of Pac-Man. To say Atari hyped the release of Pac-Man does not do hype justice. Never before had a video game had such high expectations. The game was released April 3rd, 1982, on a day that Atari called Pac-Man Day, although many retailers like Sears began selling it weeks before. On Pac-Man Day, Atari held events in 25 cities to announce the release. It was the biggest event home video games had ever seen. It was also one of the first times a video game had an actual release date. However, not everything seemed right. The initial Atari TV commercials for the game didn't even show what it actually looked like. According to Atari Business is Fun by Marty Goldberg and Kurt Vendel, the game was designed by Todd Fry as his first game project for Atari. Development was not rushed, and Fry worked hard to get the VCS to produce a decent version of a Pac-Man-like game. The problem was the limitations of the VCS, combined with the overall engineering talent left at Atari in 1981, meant that the pool of innovative engineering ideas was shallower than it had been a couple years before. Many of the best programmers had left or were planning to leave to form Activision Activision, and Imagic, among other third-party developers. Maybe VCS Pac-Man was a victim of Atari brain drain. Maybe if David Crane or Rob Fulop or Rick Mauer had been around to bounce ideas off of, the game would have turned out better. Maybe if the game was designed to use bank switching for more memory, or Fry was not given the requirement to create a two-player game, he would have had more resources to produce a more faithful version. VCS Pac-Man in and of itself is not a bad maze game. However, under the circumstances, as a version of the coin-op Pac-Man, released in 1982, at the same time Buckner and Garcia's Pac-Man Fever was hitting the charts, among an unprecedented flurry of events, TV commercials, and marketing hype, arriving on Atari's flagship platform, it was a terrible game. Atari's Pac-Man Day was a day that would live in infamy. Part 4, the press savaging of VCS Pac-Man. Here's what the review from Electronic Games actually said. All right, folks, first the bad news about the most eagerly awaited video game of all time. Atari's VCS version of Pac-Man neither looks nor sounds anything like the coin-op original. The graphics are clunky and unsophisticated. There are no changing bonus items such as cherries, limes, or keys, but simply an orange square with a blue dot inside. And the sounds, except for an inappropriate metallic boing whenever the gobbler consumes a pill, are virtually non-existent. Joystick response on all game variations, but especially Game 1, is horrible. Getting the gobbler to drop down through an opening is an ordeal. The goblins blink constantly, making them difficult to see, and their eyes do not look in the direction they are seeing or traveling, but simply rotate through four positions. Now, what about the good news? Well, there's finally a gobble game available for the Atari VCS. Beyond that, it's disappointingly difficult to find anything positive to say about this game. Considering the anticipation and considerable time Atari designers had to work on it, it's astonishing to see a home version of a classic arcade contest so totally devoid of what gave the original its charm. There's none of the whimsy of the Namco Midway version, nor any of the delightful graphic elements. Even the famous Pac-Man theme is missing. The game looks suspiciously like a project where the creators were so afraid of not measuring up to their source of inspiration that they simply avoided any conflict. Editorial. Get that? What they meant to say was, they just made a different game. The only area where the games go head-to-head is the gobbler himself, and here Atari's version makes the transition quite satisfactorily. As in the coin-op classic, players maneuver the hungry Pac-Man around a labyrinth stocked with pills and patrolled by ravenous goblins. Unlike the coin-op version, the maze is a single line and the pills look like hyphens. The bonus thingy has a stationary value of 100 points. This Pac-Man is no pushover, however, and even top-flight gamers will have their hands full racking up many thousands of points. Patterns can be developed to a certain extent, but the whole play mechanic depends on the game variation chosen. On those games where the gobbler moves very fast, joystick control is improved, although still far from slick. In the final analysis, those Atarians who are desperate for a gobble game will find that this version fits the bill. Those arcaders who demand that home versions match their coin-op cousins will be seriously disappointed. And that's the end of the review. The review of VCS Pac-Man in the pages of Electronic Games Magazine was nothing short of shocking. Never before had I read such a scathing indictment of a video game. I was so used to reading reviews that told me how a game played and what to expect, but had very little in the way of criticism. Here was a totally different type of review. The review in Electronic Games Magazine showed disdain. It showed hurt. It showed disappointment. It was like Atari had let the whole video game industry down by not following through. The last line of the review said it all. Those arcaders who demand that home versions match their coin-op cousins will be seriously disappointed. Elsewhere, the press was just as critical. It was not until the June 1982 issue of Video Magazine and the review of Pac-Man that any Atari VCS game received an unfavorable review in that magazine either. Here's a quote. Unfortunately, those who cannot evaluate Pac-Man through a lover's eyes are likely to be disappointed. It is not quite what electronic game fans expect from Atari. End quote. That review is actually one of the nicer opinions. Other publications did not pull any punches. In the premier August 1982 issue of Video Games Magazine, they described VCS Pac-Man this way. Anyone who buys Pac-Man because they love the arcade game with the same name may wind up disappointed. Other than retaining the same basic concept, it bears few similarities to the real Pac-Man. End quote. The premier issue of Video Game Player from fall 1982 called Pac-Man like this, just awful. End quote. The point here is not that VCS Pac-Man was a bad game or that it got a bad review. Is that it represented a sea change in the way Atari VCS games were reviewed by the burgeoning video game press. No longer were enthusiasts and reviewers trying to argue for the inner life of their hobby. They were now looking at games critically and calling out the failures above successes. It didn't help that Atari's Pac-Man game was such an utter dog. The press had spoken, and Atari's free ride was over. Part 5, Reviews of Atari VCS Games After Pac-Man. After the release of Pac-Man for the VCS, the coverage of Atari 2600 games took a turn for, if not the worse, then at least more critical than the fanboy slavering they had received pre-VCS Pac-Man. While some games did get good notes, like Haunted House, Super Breakout, and Star Raiders, Atari no longer got a free pass when it came to reviews. For example, in 2019, Yar's Revenge is considered a classic, but in the wake of the Pac-Man review, no Atari VCS game got a free pass. In the October 1982 issue of Electronic Games, it was called, quote, far too static, end quote, even though it was a play on the arcade game Star Castle and was arguably a deeper and more challenging experience than that game. Even when games received favorable reviews, oftentimes they were still compared to the missteps Atari made in the past. Game reviewers had been as shocked by the terrible quality of Pac-Man as game players. In the review for Defender in the November 82 issue, Electronic Games called back to both Pac-Man and Yar's Revenge to compare and contrast the relative success of their Defender cartridge. While praising Defender, Electronic Games made sure to remind people that VCS Pac-Man was tremendously disappointing. They also added insult to injury by reminding readers that Yar's Revenge was mediocre, which again, in hindsight, feels like Yar's Revenge got stuck in the negative coattails of VCS Pac-Man instead of being judged on its own merits. Even 6 months after the review of Pac-Man, in their mostly positive review of VCS Berserk from the January 1983 issue of Electronic Games, the magazine spent nearly one-third of the text trashing VCS Pac-Man and discussing how it made them nervous about maze games from Atari. Quote, when Atari announced plans to produce a home edition of the well-known Stern maze shootout Berserk, skepticism ran rampant throughout the electronic gaming world. The basic situation, an on-screen hero shoots at computer-directed robots as an arcader moves from room to room, sounded like it might be hard to reproduce given the limitations of the VCS hardware. Besides, Atari hadn't done such a masterful job on Pac-Man, its previous attempt to translate a prominent maze game for home screen play. Those disappointed by Pac-Man adopted an understandably cautious wait-and-see attitude towards Berserk. End quote. It seems that Pac-Man was such a monumental failure that even when Atari made a decent game like Berserk, they could not shake their first great failure as a video game company. This even extended to third parties, whose success only highlighted Atari's failures. In their positive review for Parker Brothers' version of Frogger from January 1983, the author could not help but allude to the VCS version of Pac-Man by writing about how difficult it must have been to translate games to the Atari VCS. Quote, translating popular coin-op video games into the home medium, particularly the VCS format, has proven one of the most formidable challenges of this decade. While some games have proven naturals for home translation, many have simply defied the programmer's best efforts to bring them to the 2600 screen. End quote. Furthermore, while the press was still reeling from the shocking problems of VCS Pac-Man, reviews for games from Activision and Imagic for the VCS consistently gained high praise. Electronic Games called Activision's Grand Prix spectacular, a visual triumph. Chopper Command, one of the most exciting cartridges you'll ever plug into the slot of your Atari VCS. Star Master, the type of video game that really has staying power. Mega Mania, Activision at its whimsical best, not to be missed. Pitfall, incredibly innovative, unquestionably recommended. And River Raid, one of the best blood and thunder blast-em-ups ever inserted into a VCS slot. They also declared Imagic's Demon Attack should be one of the best-selling video games of 1982, and Atlantis a magnificent video game. At the same time, rival systems from Coleco and Mattel were scoring some of the best reviews ever seen in the pages of a video game magazine. ColecoVision's Axon was called this, Quote, Zaxxon is a cartridge that exhausts superlatives. It's that good. It is, at least at this time, the very best home video game cartridge in the land. End quote. They followed that review in the same issue with a review of Mattel's Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, calling it, quote, one of the finest action-adventure cartridges. End quote. In the next month's issue, the ColecoVision dominated the review cycle for two more games. Turbo was called as having, quote, the most peeper-popping graphics ever seen in a home video game, end quote. And Mousetrap, they said, quote, chalk up another winner for Coleco, end quote. I'm not suggesting that Electronic Games Magazine was biased towards newer systems or third-party publishers at the expense of Atari. The praise bestowed on Activision, Coleco, Imagic, and Mattel, and many others was well-deserved. The home video game industry was moving forward, but Atari was stuck in 1983 with the six-year-old technology on their flagship platform. The newer Atari 5200 was not the instant success they desired, and they had the seemingly prevalent idea that marketing and hype could overcome the technical deficiencies of their platform. Nowhere was this more evident than with Atari's ET, the extraterrestrial cartridge. Reviewed with unfortunate synchronicity in the April 1983 issue of Electronic Games, right in between positive reviews for a selection of ColecoVision games. This is what they said, quote, ET, Atari VCS, it's truly difficult to understand a game such as ET. After splurging a reported $10 million to get the property and Steven Spielberg's cooperation, this game looks like it was turned out in about 5 weeks. The graphics are crude, the play mechanics are unlikely to captivate any but the youngest arcaders, and the entire project seems ill-conceived. End quote. As a video game enthusiast first, Electronic Games Magazine might have been biased towards newer systems or third-party publishers at the expense of Atari, but that was their right. They were preaching for the existence of video games as a hobby, not as a mouthpiece for the industry, and certainly not a mouthpiece for Atari. This was the job of the free and independent press, to keep the businessmen in check and vouch for the hobby as a whole, while saluting artistry and moving the industry forward. Video game fans at the time, like myself, appreciated them for it. We might have started as Atari fans, but our eyes were open to new systems and games outside the Atari sphere. Much has been said about E.T. the Extraterrestrial for the VCS. Some call it the worst game ever made. Others blame it for the eventual golden age video game crash. I think that's giving it too much credit. If you are like me, a 13-year-old following the video game industry in the pages of magazines as if it was the most important thing in the world, E.T. was simply more of the same, especially from Atari. It was not a good game for many reasons. Overwhelming marketing hype, high cost of the license, short development time. However, that was just indicative, at least in my mind, of Atari at the time. Electronic Games wrote the figurative shit sandwich of VCS reviews for ET by saying this, quote, save your time and money. If ET does call home, please don't tell him about this, end quote. The ET game bookended nearly a year of bad reviews for the Atari VCS, while rival platforms were faring much better. Atari VCS games had gone from being innovative in the pages of Arcade Alley to being the butt of funny jokes in the pages of the industry press. By the spring of 1983, the zeitgeist had moved away from Atari, and they would never get it back. The message was overwhelming and clear. Atari had lost a step, and their rivals were beating them at their own game. This hit me really hard. To me, my favorite video game company had become an embarrassment, and as the owner of an Atari VCS to my video gaming friends, I'd become an embarrassment by association. For me, it was time to sell out, and I put plans in place to get a Vectrex console, which looked astonishing in the pages of Electronic Games Magazine. Part 5. A community of video gamers. Pac-Man complaint letter, September 1982, Electronic Games. Quote, a Pac-Man partisan speaks. Now you've done it! In the June issue of Electronic Games, you wrote a story about Atari Pac-Man, insulted the owners of the cartridge in the programmable parade section. You gave excellent comments to every one of the cartridges throughout each story. However, the story on Pac-Man was full of put-downs. Have you ever thought that Atari's Pac-Man is the closest in audio and visually to the coin-op Pac-Man when compared to Texas Instruments' Munchman or the Odyssey's KC Munchkin? The cartridge acts the same way as the arcade version as far as movement goes. The only difference is that Atari Pac-Man's face only faces from side to side. Response on the joystick is probably the best of all the Pac-Man imitations. If you can't say anything good about a cartridge, then don't say anything at all. John Guillamo, Trenton, Michigan. End quote. John, if you're out there ever listening, we'd like to hear from you. Anyway, this is what the editor of Electronic Games said back, which is probably Bill Kunkel, but could be Arne Katz. Quote, Ed, I think that if you'll reread that article, John, you'll see that it says both positive and negative things about the cartridge. It is very important to distinguish between a reasoned, though negative review, and one which merely hurls unsupported barbs. Our critics detected some serious flaws in Atari's Pac-Man, and even while acknowledging that it is the best maze chase for the VCS, told the readers about them. Certainly, no insult was intended, either to Atari or owners of its system. No game is so good that it can't be improved. The editors of this magazine take strong exception to a closing comment. We feel it is our duty to report both the positive and negative aspects of everything. If our reviewers don't state their opinions honestly, how can readers trust their judgment when they praise a new cartridge? End quote. And that's the end of the letter and response. Atari VCS Pac-Man was unquestionably the best-selling game for the Atari VCS, with 7 million units sold. E.T. was close, coming in at number 4 with 1.5 million units sold. There is no question that these games moved units, although both left a ton of manufactured and unsold inventory, with 5 million unsold Pac-Man and untold scores of E.T. carts. However, this story is not about sales. It's about nuance and zeitgeist and the humble beginning of video game fandom and how it affected me as a pre-teenage kid smack dab in the middle of the golden age of video games. I mean, back then, I felt like I was part of something. I was in the 6th grade when VCS Pac-Man was released. The move from elementary school to junior high was harrowing at best. Friends were falling away like dead flies. Older kids on the cusp of adulthood were menacing at every turn. Simple and fun things like PE, assemblies, and lunch became abject nightmares in junior high. In PE, if someone left their locker open, coach would make us all march around the playground like recruits in basic training. Assemblies, no matter the subject, were overshadowed by who you sat with or around. Hardly anyone cared what was happening on stage, as it was the social atmosphere of the audience that mattered most and tended to wear us down. At snack and recess, the only activities were a hardcore version of handball played against the prison-like retaining walls of our tri-level school grounds, volleyball, which was reserved for only the strong, and hiding from the long-haired, bearded, 8th grade burnouts who felt the need to lock 6th graders in their lockers between smoking bowls and paging through the latest issue of High Times. It felt like there was nowhere to turn in 6th grade except maybe the pages of Electronic Games and my older mentors, Katz, Kunkel, and Worley. In those pages, I found refuge. I poured through every page. Every month I received an issue. A different sense of reality hit me than what was happening at school or what Atari was trying to sell through its ads and marketing campaigns. My favorite section of the magazine were the ones with the letters from kids, seemingly just like me, who begged for a response from our editorial heroes. The pages of Reader Response and Game Doctor were my first touch point with a larger community of like-minded kids. I wrote the magazine at least a dozen times, hoping to read a response in the pages of the magazine. Bill Kunkel described the effect this way. Quote, I think it gave the readers a sense of community. It was the only way they could really interact with us and with one another. And Q&A was, at that point, the nexus for all fan information in the world of gaming. End quote. Part 6. Ms. Pac-Man. About a year after the VCS Pac-Man review appeared in Electronic Games magazine, they printed the following in July 1983. Quote, Ms. Pac-Man is a great piece of work with all the appeal that gamers could want. End quote. Atari had finally done it. They put their minds to it and created a game that was, at the very least, an acceptable version of an arcade game. With their Atari 5200 console failing to light the world on fire and stiff competition posed by ColecoVision and its near arcade quality game ports, Atari had their back against the wall. Why was this game, VCS Ms. Pac-Man, so much better than the VCS Pac-Man? Why? Well, Ms. Pac-Man for the VCS included far more cartridge ROM, 8K, than Pac-Man, and used bank switching, which allowed for greater visuals. This meant the game cost Atari more than other the cartridges, but it was worth the price. According to AtariProtos.com, Atari VCS Miss Pac-Man was programmed by Mike Horowitz and Josh Littlefield from GCC, the company that programmed the original Miss Pac-Man arcade game, first as an illegal mod to Pac-Man, and then as an official game for Midway. GCC would go on to design the Atari 7800 console and program the first set of impressive games for that system. If only Atari had made that decision a year earlier, then, possibly, they would not have seen their fortunes fall so quickly and so dramatically. I recall buying Miss Pac-Man only after reading this review in Electronic Games magazine. In just a single year, I'd gone from blind consumer of Atari's marketing messages to consummate consumer who used the popular media as a guide for my entertainment purchases. I was very pleased with Miss Pac-Man. It remains as one of my all-time favorite Atari VCS game purchases. Playing Miss Pac-Man on the VCS elicited satisfaction that my old fascination with Atari was not wrong, and that they could still make good games if they only put in the effort. It gave me hope that one day I could still work for Atari and make video games. Not too long after, I traded up to an Atari 800 computer and taught myself to program games in BASIC. Atari was still in my blood, and it's never left. Part 7. Too little, too late. Atari's fortunes were not affected just because they released a crappy version of Pac-Man for the Atari VCS. The game is not the worst game ever, nor did it directly kill the company. However, their fortunes were affected because they released a crappy version of Pac-Man for the Atari VCS, and, thanks to a newly established critical video game press, the new community of video gamers, like the ones in the letters section of Electronic Games magazine, had the chance to know about it before they bought it and converse about it afterwards. A seemingly small detail, but a significant change that led to a whole new way Atari was covered in the press. While some Atari VCS games did receive positive notes after Pac-Man, the damage was done. In the pages of video game magazines after Electronic Games' Pac-Man review was published, there was a general feeling of disappointment and discouragement with Atari products that still exist to this day. Even though Atari managed to gain back some respectability with solid versions of games like Miss Pac-Man, the damage was done. In less than a year, the zeitgeist moved away from Atari and toward other platforms and companies. Miss Pac-Man, however good, was too little too late. And that's why, May 11th, 1982, the day that Electronic Games first reviewed Atari VCS Pac-Man in the pages of their magazine, will live as the day that Atari lost the video game war.
If you think I'm full of about Electronic Games magazine becoming one of the first communities for gamers, I'll give you one more piece of evidence. While researching the updates to this story, I ran across a letter in the September 1982 issue of Electronic Games, the same issue that had the first Pac-Man letter. It was from a young Leonard Herman, future author of the Phoenix series of video game history books, the first real books to chronicle the history of video games. Herman's letter was a microcosm of what we all felt back then, the concern for the future of the Atari VCS. "The future of the VCS," Herman writes, "now that Atari's remote control video computer system has been scrapped in favor of the new Super Game, will Atari continue to be dedicated to release new cartridges for the video computer system? Although they plan 12 cartridges plus two from Sears this year, what about next year? Can the old system live alongside the new one, or will Atari try to push the Super Game and throw the older model into obsolescence? Although VCS owners will be bombarded with software from half a dozen companies, it will still be reassuring to know that Atari will continue to produce great games." Leonard Herman, Roselle Park, New Jersey. So was Pac-Man worse than E.T.? Let's set aside the historical aspect of the grand disappointment and disillusionment it caused and look at the game itself. Like Marauder, this is one of the games that made me angry at Atari. This game broke my heart. I felt betrayed by it when it came out. But all else equal, was that actually a fair assessment of the game? As a version of Namco's Pac-Man from the arcade, it definitely does not stand up at all. It has none of the nuance, delight, or overall appeal of that game. None. Zero. Zilch. Well, what about it as a singular gaming contest? Like, what if Namco Pac-Man never existed? What if this game was just sitting on the shelf as a unique VCS game right there next to Yara's Revenge? I think in the abstract, it's actually quite enjoyable. It offers an interesting play mechanic and a real challenge. The game feels playable and does not offer the same level of frustration as E.T. So while the 12-year-old me wants to trash Atari VCS Pac-Man, the older me just does not. Historically, yes, it was quite possibly Atari's worst game. But as a standalone contest to be played on an Atari VCS in 2024, it very well might not be the best game ever made, but I have to admit, it's better than E.T. But while it may be placed above E.T. in this chart, it doesn't change the fact that when it was released in 1982, Pac-Man was the reason Atari lost the video game war. Pac-Man was the reason Atari lost the video game war, mostly because of the way it was marketed and hyped. It was so over the top, and it raised expectations so high. There was no possible way an Atari 2600 game in 1982 could live up to that hype. And that hype was fed directly into a newly burgeoning video game press machine and community of gamers. And that press was graduating from enthusiast to professional at the exact same time. And in that light, the marketing for Atari 2600 Pac-Man, that gets our lowest possible score.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.